Welcome to Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
And welcome aboard Mind Food Radio. How's your week been, Michael?
It's been very good. It's nice to have a bit of sun around the place after
very,
all this cold,
nice.
Wet weather, isn't
oh,
it?
Oh, yeah. Look, it's all around. I love the new magazine out now.
It looks fantastic, doesn't it?
Love the cover.
We're busily working away on our September edition that's coming up.
The September issue.
Of course. Nice big fat one.
Is that always a big issue in the magazine world?
Oh, I don't know. I think Christmas is bigger for us.
Yeah, I love Christmas. Now, today on the program, Angus Stewart standing by in a couple of seconds, but who else is on the show?
He sure is. And we've got Paul De Silva from Murray Valley Pork, and he's going to tell us about some new research in terms of why some of us like pork and some of us don't. We also hear from Dean Bridgeschneider, who's got stores in Auckland, Shanghai, Singapore, and he makes beautiful, beautiful pies. He's just released a brand new book. And Duncan McTavish, there's a great name, a winemaker from Waiheke Island.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, smart thinking.
Well, into the garden we go. Angus Stewart is on the line with us today, Michael. We like this segment.
I do. Gardening is one of my favourite pastimes. Welcome to the show, Angus.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Now, I know it's still pretty cold out there, but we really should be looking at our veggie garden, shouldn't we? Getting them ready for spring, or at least the beds?
Absolutely. Look, I think there's a number of things you can be doing which will give you that head start, because depending on your climate, if you're in a cold climate, then that growing season is fairly short, so you want to maximise it at every opportunity. And if you're in a warmer climate, well, it doesn't hurt to plant for an early crop. So I'm thinking things like tomatoes, for instance. Mm.
Now, when you plant tomatoes, I was going to ask you, heirloom tomatoes or other species?
Well, the heirloom tomatoes are fantastic in terms of flavour. If you're going to grow your own tomatoes, I think that's what it's all about, because they're not a sort of simple crop, really. Mm-hmm. They get caught a few pests and diseases, and so if you're going to go to that effort, I'd grow the really tasty ones.
I think I'm going to do that one, Michael.
Well, they're easy, and you know, you sort of set yourself up for the season with, you know, lots of those. They're also great in pots as well, aren't they?
Mm.
Indeed, and I think it depends on your sort of level of gardening too. So if you want an easier to grow tomato, then the small sort of cherry tomatoes are a much easier type of tomato to grow, still quite tasty.
Yep.
And then, you know, as you proceed, the level of difficulty gets a bit greater, but things like the black Russian tomato is a culinary experience not to be missed. So.
Well, I grew those last year, and I also did cherry tomatoes, and they are just perfect for salads. And of course, the Russian tomato is really beautiful with, you know, mozzarella cheese, just that really simple, and then basil leaves. It's in a drizzle of olive oil. I got to tell you, it is the best taste of summer. And I think also when it comes out of your own garden, there's
something
pretty cool about that.
Well, the thing is, you can harvest them when they're ripe rather than buying them and having to. I think you can still ripen them on the windowsill, but nothing like getting it straight from the garden. And so the concept really in late winter is to be either obtaining seedlings from the nursery, but raising your own seedlings with tomatoes is a really simple thing.
Okay.
So even just buying a black Russian tomato and collecting the seed out of that.
Oh, is that how you do it? And you dry it out?
Yeah. Essentially, a really simple way is to take the pulp containing the seeds and sort of spread that out over some tissue paper.
Oh, yeah.
And then let that dry out. And then what you do is just plant the tissue paper, put that into your seed tray, cover it with a small amount of potting mix.
How clever is that?
And you've actually spread all the seeds out ready to go. So.
And how many plants would you get out of that?
Oh, from one tomato, you'll have dozens.
Oh, so big. Now what do you need to do to prepare the soil? Is there something special we need to do there?
Personally, I like to use something like worm castings or well-rotted manure or a homemade compost, because that gives you a nice balanced diet of nutrients for your plants. So you don't automatically need to be adding lime and so on. And and really, if your soil is growing good vegetables, then the pH is likely to be in the right sort of range. So it's only if you're seeing really sort of stunted vegetables and yellow colouring the leaves and so on that I'd be even thinking about.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much, Angus. Very interesting today. I'm going to do that thing with the Russian black tomato.
I know, and they taste beautiful for summer.
Yeah.
Really great.
Can't wait.
Oh, it's just one of life's simple but wonderful pleasures.
Thank you very much, Angus.
Hey, thanks, Angus.
My pleasure.
This is Mind Food Radio. Smart thinking.
Well, of course, one of our most popular parts of Mind Food are the psychology stories and features and people we get to speak to. But probably what we're always looking for is that practical, positive psychology that you can really apply in your everyday life. So, you know, at work or your different relationships you have.
Exactly.
So I'd like to welcome on today's show Sue Langley, who is going to also be part of the Mind and Its Potential show. Hi, Sue.
Hi.
So what are you going to be talking about at the event in October?
Talking a little bit about the emotionally intelligent brain, which is basically to me about the intelligent use of our emotions on a day-to-day basis, and how learnings around neuroscience can help us at work and every day with our partners, kids, etc.
Do you think people deal with their emotions in their own way, or does it need to be coached out somehow?
Oh, I think there's a bit of both. I think, yes, absolutely, people have their own ways of dealing with emotions. Some of them will be sustainable, some of them will be unsustainable.
Yeah.
Some of them will work better than others. A lot of people talk about controlling or suppressing their emotions, and yet we know that doesn't work.
Mm.
And yet a lot of people still use that as a way of sort of handling them.
What's a typical scenario when you go work with a client? What would they be dealing with, and how do you help them?
Well, for a lot of people, there's a lot of stress, a lot of pressure, certainly in the workplace, and so often people aren't dealing with their own emotions. We often hear stories where people are sort of getting burnt out, or they're quietly going off to see a psychologist or something because they can't handle their emotions day to day because of numerous reasons due to, you know, workplace changes.
Mm.
But often it's a case of they don't know how to handle somebody else's emotion. They know that people in their team, colleagues, their direct reports, whoever, are having emotions around something, and yet they don't really know what to do with it. We try to focus on the positive psychology perspective because we know that if you focus on a strengths-based approach, you actually get better performance. So it's kind of a win-win. People are happier and organizations get bottom-line results.
For a listener listening in today, they may be sitting there going, well, emotions, I've never really thought about that. What happens if they dislike their job? That's got to have a huge impact on themselves and also their career aspects, hasn't it?
Of course. And the way we feel changes the way we think. And I think that's the importance of understanding then the brain around emotion.
Mm.
When we are in a negative mood, we are likely to be really good at critiquing and finding fault and finding problems and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're in a job you hate, what you're going to find is all day you're seeing the things that support the reason why you don't want to be there and all the negative things about the job. So what can we do to try and shift that perspective in a number of ways? How can you look for the good bits? But equally, how can you put yourself in a positive, confident state so that if you choose to, you can go and find another job?
When you talk about emotions, though, Sue, what are three things, as someone listening in today, that they could utilise in their own life to, improve their emotions?
Well, this is going to sound really simple, but one of the great tools is learning how to label your emotions accurately.
Mm-hmm.
We know that having a good vocabulary and being able to accurately label your emotions, it improves your ability to perceive your own emotions, so be much more aware of how you're feeling, but it also triggers a part of the brain that acts as a self-regulation mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have the ability to acknowledge within myself I'm feeling angry, frustrated, humiliated and embarrassed,
yep.
That gives me a much richer vocabulary than just going, no, I'm just angry, I'm angry. And it also then gives me the ability to use strategies to deal with that. So the biggest thing, and it sounds so simple, but improve your emotional vocab.
Very interesting topic, Sue, and really nice to have you on today's program as well.
Thank you, it's a pleasure.
And of course, for more details and to hear Sue's podcast, you can jump onto mindfood.com. Lots of information up there, Michael.
There sure is, and any more information that you want on Mind and Its Potential, just go to mindfood.com.
Mind Food Radio, smart thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
Well, we love food, Michael.
We do. And the other night, I was very lucky enough to go to the opening of the brand new Sofitel Hotel in Auckland.
What was that like?
It was absolutely beautiful. In fact, as we arrived a little late, and there were two opera singers, and they were carrying candles, sort of lanterns, and they were both singing.
Yeah.
And it was right at the front door, and I thought, oh, my God, do you have to sing to get into this party? But it was beautiful. The whole place was candle-lit.
Oh,
and,
lovely.
I don't know if you've been there. It's brand new, but it's all these beautiful sort of ponds of water. It's a really lovely night. And although it rained, it actually added to it all because it was it just visually a real treat.
Fantastic.
So on today's show, I'd like to welcome the brand new executive chef to the Sofitel in Auckland. And Scott Brown has come from the world-renowned and very popular Hooker Lodge. Hi, Scott.
Hi, how are you?
Very good. So is it a big step moving away from Hooker Lodge to Sofitel in Auckland?
Yeah, it's been a pretty big move. It's taken my first head chef role and taking the opening of a new hotel, but it's been a great challenge and it's a really exciting opportunity for me.
Now, before we get on to the Sofitel, tell me, what was it like working at the Hooker? Because it's so renowned around the world.
Yeah, it's an amazing place to work. Some of the clients you get, just unbelievable. A lot of funny requests. There's a motto there, which is basically, we never say no, so you have to deal with a lot of strange requests.
I think Ben's got their motto too, actually, Scott.
Oh, no, I've deleted that off my business card.
And tell us a little bit about your food philosophy in terms of your approach to food.
I try not to overcomplicate each dish and try to keep probably three or four elements on each dish. Basically, try not to be too clever. I'd say it's quite contemporary, but I take a lot of inspiration from classical dishes, even dishes I ate as a child, dishes that my grandmother's cooked.
And in terms of the New Zealand ingredients, you know, the beautiful, I've just come back from Central Otago and did a couple of stories down there and talked to a couple of the producers. You know, the fresh seasonal produce in those areas are just absolutely beautiful. But they were explaining that, you know, in the North Island, there's much more seafood and the availability of seafood. Is that a big component? Because I guess you are right on the water there in Auckland.
Yeah, we're quite lucky with Lava Dining. So we're located right on the waterfront, just up from the fish market. So we're very spoiled for seafood. We're using a lot of trevally, monkfish, local clams from the South Island we're using a lot of at the moment, lots of different things.
And with regard, you know, Sofitel being a big international brand, how influenced are you with international menus compared to the local ingredients?
We're quite lucky that Sofitel's, they quite leave us to create our own gastronomy, so we're not too influenced by them, but we do use a lot of overseas. I read a lot and use a lot of influence from overseas.
Do you have a favourite chef?
Yeah, a few different ones. A couple of chefs I work for, Bruce Poole in London from Chez Bruce, he had a big influence on me, and Justin North from Bacass, where I worked at, he was a huge influence and quite like his style of food as well.
Well, we've had Justin on the show before, and he's a great guy because, you know, he really believes of using, you know, the fresh produce from the season and really going back to find the produce from the source. So, you know, he's done extraordinary things. It's been great.
Yeah, it's definitely the greatest way to cook. We're quite like in Auckland as well. There's a lot of small producers and they actually come into the restaurant and bring their samples in, so we get to try quite a lot of things. Which is great for writing menus.
That's when it gets exciting, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's very good, because sometimes you have to go out and source them, but they're quite open to bringing in their little boutique-y items that they might just grow one herb or specialise in goat's cheese, so you get to sample a lot and makes writing a menu a lot easier.
What do you like about cooking? You mentioned your grandmother and home-cooked dishes from a kid. What turns you on in the kitchen, and why do you like doing this as a job?
The pressure, I think. That's probably one of the... I quite enjoy the pressure of a long day, and then you get a busy service. That's great fun to see people's face when you cook them.
So well done. Congratulations on that. The hotel is absolutely spectacular.
Oh, thank you.
And, yes, keep creating non-stressful food. That's what we want.
Thanks, Scott.
Scott, okay, thank you very much.
Nice to have you.
Scott Brown, the brand-new executive chef at the brand-new Sofitel Hotel in Auckland.
It's Mind Food Radio. On the line with us now, Michael, Tammy Allen is joining us.
That's right, from the Big Rethink. And this is something that Mind Food is working with them on. We're very proud to be associated with this. It's a wonderful idea. So welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, guys. Nice to be here.
Now, you're the director and producer of us. Tell us all about what the Big Rethink's all about.
It's a program that reduces the stigma and discrimination associated with mental illness, or we call it mental unwellness, or just really being human. Mm. So the purpose of the Big Rethink is to move people away from the mental illness thinking and into thinking that life challenges and our responses to stress are all really normal and shouldn't have to be hidden under the table or spoken about in whispers.
Mm. But people do, though, don't they?
Oh, they do, they do. And, I mean, that's our biggest problem, because anyone that's recovered from mental illness, the biggest thing that they've said about their recovery is that it was talking about it that helped the most. As soon as they realise that, oh, my gosh, you know, half the population goes through this and I'm not the only one, there are people out there that have gone through very similar experiences to me, then it's that kind of opening of doors and realising what, how many things are out there to help you that gets people through the journey. But we find in Auckland that over the past few years, the communities really respond to entertainment. They love to be entertained. So if we can kind of sneak this message in a way that also entertains them but is a little bit non-threatening, you know, they can laugh with us, they can cry, but, you know, pretend that they're crying at the piece of theatre or the piece of music as opposed to something that they relate to, it sort of makes it safe and engaging and all of those things.
Now, with the big rethink, the scripts I know are coming in, and then you choose, you know, a number of scripts, and then there is a week, isn't it, that all these are performed?
That's right, yeah. We're receiving scripts from all over the world, from as far away as kind of New York and Norway at this stage, which is quite incredible. And the scripts all deal in some way or other with that those topics of discrimination. Some of them deal very specifically with a particular diagnosis or somebody's journey and how they got through it. And others deal more generally with what it's like to relate to being discriminated against in some ways. So we'll have a look at those scripts at the end of this month and then choose possibly around 10 of them of what we think are the best scripts to put on at Q Theatre in Auckland City, which is our newest and most fantastic theatre. and then whatever other of the scripts that come in that we think meet the guidelines in terms of suicide prevention and destigmatisation, they'll be released to anyone all over the world that would like to choose some of those scripts to put on in their own towns.
Now, you've had some pickup, though, haven't you, already, that there are some cities that are going to put those together?
That's right. We've got Mind Australia in Melbourne. They're putting on a show, a rethink show, and it looks like there's somebody in New York that wants to take the film submissions we get and put on a film screening. And we've also got some interest so far, but nothing confirmed, for Sydney, Queensland, possibly Norway, Scotland and the UK. So we're hoping that those come through in the end as well. I think that a lot of those guys want to see the scripts first before they decide to go ahead and put on a show.
Tammy, what are the dates again for the big rethink?
It runs from the 2nd to the 6th of October.
Yep.
So we've got a Koha evening on the 2nd, which will be part of our dress and full tech rehearsal. And then the 3rd to the 5th will be our public performances with our final gala evening, including drinks and nibbles and slightly higher ticket prices because of the awards that will be handed out on the 6th of October.
Great stuff. And Mind Food's behind it. We're going to shoot a beautiful portfolio of images. That's going to be in an upcoming edition.
We can't wait. We're so excited that Mind Food's behind it. Thanks so much, guys. It's really exciting.
Oh, that's great. Tammy Allen, great to have you on the show today.
Great to be here.
And, the big rethink. For more details, go to mindfood.com. I really believe, and I think MindFood has a role here too, that if we can write stories and get people talking and thinking, you just don't know, it might help someone. And whether it's a neighbour or a friend or a work colleague, you know, reach out to them.
MindFood Radio. Smart thinking. The perfect gift idea is a MindFood magazine subscription. Visit mindfood.com today.
Well, now on Mind Food Radio, we're off to a place called Waiheke Island. Where on earth is that?
You Aussies, I love the way you try and pronounce that. Waiheke Island is just off the coast of Auckland.
Waiheke Island.
Waiheke Island. Yeah. It's absolutely beautiful. And it has many vineyards on it, beautiful beaches. I go there a lot in terms of holidays and family holidays. But during the week, I was at an event and I got talking to the winemaker of Man O' War Winery, Duncan McTavish, and we've got him on the line today. Hi, Duncan.
Hello, how are you?
Very good. Well, you live in a very beautiful part of the world, don't you?
I do indeed.
Now, for particularly our Australian audience, tell us a little bit about Waiheke Island and where it exactly is.
Sure. Waiheke Island's a little slice of paradise, just 35 minutes from downtown Auckland by ferry. It's in what we call the Hauraki Gulf. So it's in the it's a beautiful coastline surrounded by, thankfully, about 100 dormant or dead volcanoes. But it's not far from downtown Auckland.
The climate is quite subtropical, isn't it? It can be raining in Auckland, and yet it's quite sunny and quite a different climate in Waiheke.
Rain patterns tend to go around Waiheke Island, so it could be raining on the mainland, but perfectly sunny on Waiheke Island.
So tell us about Man O' War Vineyards.
Man O' War Vineyards is on the eastern end of Waiheke Island. It's a family-owned estate. We've been growing grapes since 1993, but the first commercial release of Man O' War wines was 2008. We're the largest producer on Waiheke Island. We produce approximately 30,000 cases, and what makes us really unique is that we grow 76 different vineyards spread across 174 acres on 4,500 acres of land. So a patchwork of very small vineyards scattered across the hilltops and valleys of eastern Waiheke Island. We produce everything from sparkling wine, Method Traditionnel, to big hearty reds.
Now, you've worked in other wineries across New Zealand. How does it compare?
Correct. I've worked in the South Island. I've worked all around the world, actually. And what makes Waiheke so unique is the just the diverse range of vineyard sites. Like I say, we've got 74 different vineyards. And in terms of a viticultural project, there's nothing to compare, certainly within New Zealand, and certainly in many of the regions that I've been fortunate enough to work with around the world. So it's just such a unique proposition. We've got a really diverse portfolio of, you know, high quality wines, and it's just something that's quite rare in the new world, I guess.
What makes the island so special for growing wine and all these wonderful things you're doing?
I guess it's a combination. Man O' War itself has got a soil type that's found only at Man O' War Station called the Stony Batter Clay Loam. It's a mix of volcanic soil and clay soils. But I guess what makes us so unique in the wine world in general is that we're truly coastal grape growers. So our vineyards are incredibly close proximity to the sea. We've got vineyards that you go too far down the row and then you fall off a cliff and into the ocean.
Yeah.
So it's very dramatic landscape, and certainly the coastal influence is the key.
Now, Michael's got a bit of land at the back of his house. Can we grow any grapes there in Sydney?
I could consult to him.
Is it hard to grow grapes as a bit of a hobby?
Oh, it's incredibly hard. Yeah. Leave it to the professionals.
Yeah.
I've got to keep myself employed.
Yeah, good on you.
Hey, Duncan, thanks for being on today's show. You live in an absolutely beautiful part of the world.
Pleasure.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, smart thinking.
Michael, you and I love pies. I have a pie at least three times a week.
Really? Do you?
I love them.
I've got to tell you, I make them, I eat them, I buy them. I just love pies. Mm. I love savoury pies, sweet pies.
Yeah, I love savoury food.
There is a brand new book. It's called 80 Plus Pies and Pastry Delight. So the name itself. But look at it. Look how great
it's
that
is. Selling it to me.
So I'd like to welcome to the show Dean Bretschneider. Is that how you say your name, Dean?
Yes, indeed. Yep.
Now you are like a global baker, because you're actually, we're phoning you in Singapore, but you live in Denmark, you've got shops in New Zealand and all around the joint. Tell us about your life.
A number of years ago, you know, over too many wines as you do, and I guess I rock and, you know, I hang out in the food world. So, you know, people like Rick Stein and so forth are good friends of mine. And, you know, I was in Shanghai actually, where I've got a business, and it just seemed obvious that what I seem to be doing is wandering around the globe doing baking, and so the Global Baker became the brand that I developed probably about, sort of 8 years ago.
Did you have to start all this yourself, or were you asked to come and bake at various places?
You know, it dawned upon me that when I wrote my first book, and, you know, bear in mind, Pie is my 10th book, and my first book was 12 years ago, and the philosophy for writing books, apart from, you know, the little bit of money I earn from them, is to share knowledge and share information with people, so that it really makes baking look, you know, outstanding. Just, you know, in other words, I got sick of the bloody chefs taking all the limelight from the bakers who equally do such a great job. And so, you know, just really developed there, and I just love sharing. And, you know, I travel excessively, like almost every week, and I just think there's got to be a medium to be able to share that interest with people in books is how I do it.
So the stores, for example, the one in Singapore, is it that much different to the one in Shanghai and the one in Auckland?
Yeah, I mean, the one in Auckland is very Aucklandish. I mean, the bread still, you know, the product's still very... you know, global.
Yeah.
But you know, Auckland's like, you know, it's just too small and doesn't have the numbers to support a really, you know, good viable business. And you know, at the end of the day, whilst I can put my hand on the heart and say I like to share knowledge and passion and enthusiasm, you know, at the end of that, it's got to make money as well. So
really working in that region where you are and then further up into Europe, I mean, you've definitely got the numbers.
And look, that's what it's all about. And, you know, because, you know, look, baking's just, it's, I mean, I've got 7 TV shows, I've got Kiwi Baker in Singapore, Kiwi Baker in Shanghai, and I'm filming Kiwi Baker in France. And baking's is really exploding at the moment. And, you know, but here's, you know, I mean, look, not everyone loves French baking, you know, dare I say it, or German baking. And so, you know, people from Australia and New Zealand, we're such a young baking culture, we can kind of like do what we like and take the very best of everything and then rock up on the doorsteps of these very baking rich cultures and give the people a new experience, because all they've been used to is French baking, for example.
Dean is really a smart cookie, isn't he? Like when you hear him start to talk, you know, it's, what advice do you give to young people listening in today who are, you know, maybe considering a career going into baking?
Yeah, I mean, and they just look at me weird because, you know, they don't understand the hard yards that, you know, we didn't have Twitter, we didn't have Facebook, we didn't have Google, you know, we just had to do the hard yards, and that's often by you know, networking and you know, stretching yourself to exceed, you know, well beyond your, you know, anyone's expectation. But now, you know, you just stick a photo on a bloody Facebook and, you know, people follow you for some reason. So the young ones, I try to, you know, and I've got a bunch of them here. I mean, I just love employing people. and the young ones kind of, they don't really understand the hard work because it's just a different era. But, I mean, they understand, they just want to get to where I am, but they want to do it like in 3 years.
Hey, Dean, thanks for being on the show. The brand new book is called Pie, 80 Plus Pies and Pastry Delights. It's absolutely beautiful. And I can't wait to cook from it. So thanks for being on the Today Show.
No problem, thanks.
Well, now on Mind Food Radio, a topic that's a very interesting one, Michael, supporting people at the end of their life.
That's right, and community service is such an important part out there in society, as it is within Mind Food. The very first section in Mind Food is called Community, and I'd like to welcome to the show Yeshi Kadro. Welcome, Yeshi.
Nice to be here, thank you.
Tell us a little bit about what you do and what you're involved with.
Well, I'm the CEO of an organisation called Karuna up here in Brisbane, and we provide care and education that focuses on issues around the end of life. So we support people to remain at home rather than in hospital when they have a life-limiting illness.
Mm-hmm.
And we have an education program that people can tap into at any stage of their life, really, just to help live with an awareness of mortality, but how to still live a very full and meaningful life without being in denial about, you know, the transience of life.
It's a very interesting profession that you're in. Do you think it's a calling?
I'm involved here really because I got ordained as a Buddhist nun in the Tibetan tradition about 30 years ago. So the spiritual care that we provide through Karuna is a passion for me, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to support people spiritually at the end of life.
I think also when someone close to you, whether a family member or a friend, I think all those people around it affects them in such a powerful way that there is a moment in time there that you do reassess a lot about yourself and life. Do you agree with that?
Oh, that's definitely true. The thing people will often say, you know, what was important before, say, diagnosis with a life-limiting illness is no longer important afterwards, and you really focus differently. I think families will often come closer together. They gain an immense amount of courage by providing care, and they also gain more confidence. As I say, they come out of that space of denying or trying to ignore mortality. They start to, you know, think about their own beliefs and therefore be more prepared themselves when that time comes.
Do you find it hard or difficult personally when, you know, there are people there that share a very different view in and around spirituality?
In terms of the people we care for?
Mm. Yes.
You're thinking? In that case, you know, we make sure that we bring in the most appropriate support people. So if we're not the appropriate one, if they, if people have a very strong Christian faith, we will, we've got some volunteers who are from the different Christian traditions, and we're part of a multi-faith network here. So we always make sure that they get the support from the appropriate person because, you know, at that stage of your life, it's not the time to start really exploring too many other lineages or whatever.
Yeah, she, for somebody listening into our radio show today who might be going through something like this, family, friends, or maybe the person listening, what advice do you have for them?
I'm using the words now of His Holiness the Dalai Lama. But he said the most important thing, first off, is to come to a place of acceptance. And then once that has happened, you then can start to make your own preparations, and that may be leaving things in order for your family, saying goodbye to family. It may be more internal where you're sorting out your own beliefs and to feel acceptance of how you've lived your life, like to actually, if things are troubling you, to actually think about those things and work through them, reconcile with people that you're upset with, so that you're at peace with yourself and with others, and then, you know, if there is a divine being in your life, to also ensure that you've found peace with that being as well.
And yes, so you're going to be part of the Mind and Its Potential conference in October.
Yes, that's right.
And for more details on that, go to mindfood.com. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to talk to you.
And now on Mind Food Radio, moving into, well, the interesting side of meats and things and pork.
And cooking.
And cooking. We love cooking.
I know. And, you know, we get sent a lot of things into Mind Food. And the other Friday, we got a whole bunch of pork. Beautiful, these cuts of pork. And there was enough to hand round. So we all took different pieces home. And it's from the Murray River.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. When we came back in after the weekend, we all had cooked it a completely different way.
What did you do?
In actual fact, we had photocopied a recipe out of the magazine that was about to launch. Yep. And then everyone thought, oh, I'm going to make that.
Yep.
None of us actually did. We all did something completely different. We actually did a roast. You know, the kids and everyone loves pork. So we just did a very simple roast.
Oh, is this your Sunday roast thing that you're doing?
It was.
Oh, very good.
It was. But on the line, I've got Paul from Murray Valley Pork. Hi, welcome to the show, Paul.
Hi, it's an absolute pleasure to be here, Michael.
Now, you're the brand manager for this brand that we've fallen in love with at work.
Fantastic. That's what we like to hear.
Now, it's based on the Murray River, is that right?
That's correct. We're based at Corowa, right on the Murray River in the Southern Riverina in New South Wales.
Oh, so, good on you. Now, you were telling us off-air that some of the research in and around people buying and cooking pork, it's some of it's actually not that positive in terms of repeat usage, I guess.
Yeah, look, the I guess the main message has been that consumers find pork to be quite inconsistent in the Australian marketplace. So we've taken a lot of careful note of that, and by careful on-farm management and processing and we're actually able to control both of those because we have our own processing and farming facilities. We can produce a product that's guaranteed to always have the right taste and always be juicy. And they're the two things that the people struggle with because the consumers in Australia have largely been trained to overcook pork. Everyone's mother told them that it had to be white and had to be cooked all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely not the case. It should be pink. And the problem is that consumers have also, in recent years, expressed a desire for a product with not very much fat. People look at meat and think that the lower the amount of fat they can see, the higher the quality. Now, when you produce animals with a low fat cover, which is what we do to meet consumer demand, it makes the meat much more susceptible to overcooking. And you have that double whammy of people getting a meat that is susceptible to being overcooked and being trained to overcook it. So we've been very diligent in producing a pork product that stands up to that. people do enjoy the taste of pork. Pork is a fabulous meat, and in fact, it's the world's most eaten meat, which is a fact a lot of people aren't aware of. And Australians are starting to become aware of the options that you can have with pork and just how good it is when it's done well.
Well, Paul, look, thank you very much for joining us on today's program. You've changed our minds on pork, and of course, there's a great recipe in this month's magazine of Mind Food as well. Thanks for being on the show today.
Absolute pleasure, Michael. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that's a wrap. Here we are at the end of the show. Michael's packed up already out the door. Michael, before you go, what was your highlight today on the program?
Well, you know, it's always Angus Stewart, I've got to say. I'm looking forward to getting out into the garden. I thought Dean, an extraordinary life in terms of having those, you know, as a global baker, having stores in Shanghai and Auckland and Denmark, you know, great guy. And his
great
new book
story.
Is just beautiful.
And the big rethink.
Exactly, you know, that whole idea of talking about depression and getting it out there and getting it up on stage so people can sort of sit back and just enjoy, you know, those different scripts and shows about it.
Now, next week is show number 20, the big 2-0 for us, and lots of great interviews still to come.
We have lots of celebrities. It's a big show for us.
So that's it from Ben and Michael. Have a nice week, won't you?
Have a great weekend.
Mind Food Radio Smart Thinking was produced in the studio of Radio Australasia. Produced by Ben Starr and Brian Newington and Patrick Kayrus. Bogart Torelli speaking.